Welcome to the second lecture on the course Personnel Economics 2. The topic of today is authority in organization. We will continue on the topic of authority that we touched upon last week when we considered the model by Herbert Simon, who looked at the choice between a contract, a sales contract, and an employment contract. This choice is fundamental to personnel economics, to personnel management, if you like, because if it's a sales contract, it's not an employment relationship, and therefore we don't do personnel economics with sales contract. We just want some job to be done. We go out and procure the required services from independent contractors to do the job that we want. And we specify very carefully in this contract the nature, the extent, and other parameters of the job that we want to be done. Of course, we do so in order to maximize our profit as we see it today. Come tomorrow, circumstances change, the environment changes, and we would like this job to be done slightly differently, but the contractor will say, sorry, I will do the job according to the specifications provided in the contract. We could write another contract if you like, but that's going to cost you additional money. The contract will know that you're in trouble and will try to make a contract in such a way so as to totally deprive you of the rent from improving your situation thanks to this additional flexibility offered by another sales contract. This is not the case with the employment contract. You've signed the employment contract with someone who agrees voluntarily to submit themselves to your authority. That is, to agree to listen to the instructions and orders that you give to them and perform an action from a certain set of actions. And this set of actions includes several actions, potentially in a range of actions, from which you can pick the one that best fits the new environment in the future. So the employment contract is interesting for the employer, for the principal, because it gives the principal additional flexibility. It costs additional money to the principal, because obviously the employer needs some cover from the uncertainty. Sorry, the employee needs some cover from the uncertainty that he's now facing. In terms of total efficiency, there can be circumstances in which sales contract is efficient, in which case there's no personnel economics and this course is totally useless. Another set of circumstances, an employment contract is actually more efficient than the free market-based sales contract, in which case we're in business. Whether this course is useless or not, of course, remains a question even in this case. Now, today we're going to continue on the topic of authority, and in particular, the accent will be made today on the issue which falls under the heading authority, the issue of delegation. So today we're going to be talking a lot about delegation. It's part of authority. So authority is not only about telling the agent exactly what they need to do in each case. Maybe some principals do that, but in most cases of employment contracts, in most cases of voluntarily accepted authority, there is a leeway, there is a room for agents to make decisions on their own upon receiving the right decision rights and delegation from the principal. So today we're going to be looking at when and to what extent the delegation is given by the principal in the principal-agent relationships. So today we're going to be looking Only into the case of employment contract. So there's no sales contract, there's employment contract. And within this employment contract, we're going to establish situations in which the principals optimally give delegation rights to the agents, and at the situations in which it is optimal for the principal not to delegate things to the agent, but rather to make a decision about the course of action themselves and instruct the agent to do accordingly. Now, the key model for this lecture is coming from the seminal paper by Philippe Aguillon and Jean Tirole in 1997. This is the paper called The Formal and Real Authority in Organization, published in the Journal of Political Economy, which I think is number one in economics at the moment. Jean Tirole is, I think last year or 2 years ago, he won the Nobel Prize in Economics. Have you heard about it? So a big guy. And Philippe Aguillon is also a famous professor at the University College London. This is, you know, when it comes to delegation, when it comes to the issue of delegation and the distribution of authority within an organization, this paper is the classical paper to read, and these people are the experts in the field. So those of you who have extra interest in the issues of authority and delegation, you're very welcome to download and read this paper. It's a challenging paper, it's very mathematical, it's very deep, and it's a big paper, right? But if you manage it, I'm going to be very impressed. Now, so before we get to the notion of delegation, let us introduce some terminology that's going to be useful for us for the duration of today's lecture. The first bit of terminology is formal and real authority. Now, what is we know what authority is. Authority is the power to give orders and give instructions. Okay. Now, it turns out there's formal authority and there's real authority. So what is formal authority? Formal authority is the formal, contractual, written right for a certain principal to exercise authority over certain agents regarding certain issues. Okay, so the University of Constance has the formal authority to do many things. I'm just thinking about a suitable example. The University of Constance has the formal authority regarding the content and procedures involved in the teaching of personnel economics. Okay, so they have the formal authority to tell me which chapters I should cover and how I should construct my course, which topics I should include, at which level of difficulty. They have the formal authority tell me what I should, how I should practice student assessment on this course. So they have the formal authority to do so. It's written somewhere in the regulations, in the very, very many gazette that the Baden-Württemberg's Ministry of Education has issued. But this is formal authority. And what differs it from authority as such? The formal authority is just a contractual right to exercise authority. It's like an option. Think about it as an option. Formal authority does not mean that the principal will necessarily exercise this authority. Okay? So yes, University of Constance can tell me what I should include in the course personnel economics. They can tell me how I should assess the performance of students. But will they actually do so? No, right? They may do so, but they in many, many situations, many cases, they're not going to do so. So what they do is they delegate this authority to the agent, to Nick. In which case, Nick, even though he has no formal authority according to the contract, will have the real authority to implement decisions, to make decisions and implement certain actions on behalf of the principal. Okay? And obviously, these two shades of authority, these two varieties of authorities are very, very different. Formal authority is like an option in the language of finance, right? Real authority is not an option. Real authority is actually, you know, exercising authority on behalf of the principal. Now, why do you separate between formal and real authority? Well, you separate between formal and real authority because these are the two different types of authority that exist in reality. We want to understand reality to make better managerial decisions. We see, hey, in many cases, even though principals have the formal authority to do things, they delegate it to the agents. The question is why? A related question, perhaps even a more interesting question, is why does the principal still reserve the right to exercise formal authority? Right? This is even a more interesting issue. If the University of Constance almost never tells Nick how to teach personnel economics, why does University of Constance care to have the formal authority of telling Nick how to teach personnel economics? It's a very subtle question, right? What is gained by the principal by retaining formal authority? Why don't you just fully delegate and say, okay, we're going to rewrite a contract, and according to the new contract, I will not even have the formal authority to do things. You will have both the formal and real authority to do things. Now, that's not going to happen. Why is it not going to happen? Because the main reason is asymmetric information. And asymmetric information, of course, causes hidden action and the conflict between the principal and the agent. Okay, so the University of Constance knows something that Nick doesn't know. Nick knows something that the University of Constance doesn't know. For instance, Nick knows his level of effort and you know, the level of dedication and professionalism that he puts into his course. The university cannot observe it, so Nick can always pretend that, oh, it's not because I'm a rubbish teacher, it's because I'm teaching to bad students who don't want to learn that the student evaluations are so bad. The University of Constance would in this case like to have the authority to check Nick and say, excuse me, young man, you really have to change your attitude, otherwise you're out. To contain, not to exacerbate, to contain the tension, the conflict of interest between the principal and the agent, it may be optimal in a variety of situations for the principal to retain formal authority while delegating the real authority to the agent. All right, so it actually is optimal. Another example. I have the formal authority to decide, well, now we're in the process of organizing bachelor and master seminars in this semester, and I have, of course, the formal authority to decide on, you know, what times in a day and in which rooms the kickoff and presentation meetings for the seminars will be held. I have the formal authority to do so, but I don't care. I have no time. I have other projects, and I have full trust in the soundness and efficiency of my secretary, who is very good at scheduling, planning, etc. So I delegate the formal authority to plan the rooms and times and dates to my secretary. And this is an optimal thing to do. My secretary still keeps calling me, asking questions about, is it convenient for you? Is it convenient for you? This room, this date, this time. I'm telling her, look, this is your decision. I've delegated it to you. It's optimal for me to do so, because it saves time. And even a more clever reason, which we're going to cover in this lecture in greater detail. When you delegate authority, you empower the agent, and the agent puts in more effort into his work. And of course, the more effort the agent puts into his work, the better performance your organization achieves, right? So one way to motivate people is to actually give them authority to make decisions for which you still maintain the formal authority. Another way is to go even further and say, let's delegate completely, let's give formal authority as well as real authority to the agent. The agent will work even harder then. That may be too much because it will exacerbate the conflict of interest. So we are in a world of trade-offs, many trade-offs between motivating the agent to work hard and keeping a degree of control over the agent's action that the model of formal and real authority in organization by Aguillon and Tirol describes in a very succinct way. So this is kind of summary of formal versus real authority. People who have formal authority, they rubber stamp, they just approve without really, you know, taking the trouble of reviewing the decision. Whereas people who have the real authority have no contractual power to do so. That's why they need a rubber stamp from the bearers of formal authority. But the bearers of formal authority have full trust in them, so they just rubber stamp. Okay, now let's go through the model. The model in the paper is, it's simple. It starts simply. Okay, so the maths are very simple. All you need to do is to be able to take a derivative, nothing else. So I'm not lying to you. I wasn't lying to you when I was telling you about the maths and technical requirements for this course. In the paper itself, things get very challenging in the second half of the paper, but in the lecture we're not going to go through the second half of the paper. So we're going to keep it nice and simple. So the model describes an employment contract between the principal and the agent, right? And the principal hires agent, and the agent's task is to find out which project to implement, right? So think about a fund, right? A fund, an endowment fund that manages a large amount of money that former students of the University of Constance donated to their alma mater. So there is a few billion euros and this money needs to be managed. How do you manage money? You invest portions of this money into various financial ventures. You buy equity, you buy stock, you set up new businesses, you buy currencies, you put the money on a saving deposit. You know, there are various ways that you can do it. Now, each of the ways that you can do, that you can manage your money is called a project, right? So there is a variety of projects. In fact, there are three different ways of doing things or more. Why three is an interesting question, which we will, which I leave for your homework, once you've understood the model, the entire model. So there are three or more projects. And the principal has no idea which project he really wants to implement, which project brings the highest utility to the principal. We live in a world of uncertainty. You thought that the blue chips were the thing to invest in, but now you have this stock market crash and your shares became worthless. You used to think that you should invest in commodities. Commodities price is going up with the increasing level of uncertainty. Now, after some of the uncertainty, some of the global uncertainty is resolved, commodity prices go down, gold prices go down. So, you don't know. For the principal, all of the projects, all of the opportunities to invest money are ex ante identical, right? You have no idea which one is best for you. So you hire an agent, you hire an investment banker, let's say, or a broker, somebody who is willing to invest time and effort in order to get data and do some analysis and summon the opinions of the industry experts, and based on this information to tell you which project is the best, right? So this is the task of the agent. Now, when this uncertainty is realized, the projects, of course, are different in terms of the benefits that they bring to the principal and the agent. So take a certain project, project K. It brings big BK euros to the principal and small BK to the agent, right? So think about this as a payoff from investment in project K that the fund gets, the endowment fund gets, and think about the small B as commission paid to the investment banker for doing the deal, right? So now there is an outside option. They don't have to implement a particular project. They can just let the money stay where it is without doing anything with it, in which case both will get a payoff of zero. So you don't have to do anything if you're not sure. You could just do nothing, in which case your payoff will be zero. Now, the third thing I have to say about the projects is that the assumption in the model is that there exists a sufficiently bad project. What does it mean? It means that there is an investment opportunity which is disastrous, you know, which is a scam, which is a Bernie Madoff stuff, right? So you don't know exactly which of the projects is a bad project, but you just know that there exists at least one sufficiently bad project. Now, why do we need this assumption? We need this assumption in order to give the principal and the agent the option to do nothing and get a payoff of zero. Now, why do we need this option is another question for your practice, right? So when to think about when you get the entire model. So there is a sufficiently bad project, and the sufficiently bad project assumption guarantees that the principal and the agent will, under some circumstances, shake hands and say, okay, we're not going to do anything, let's just let the money stay, and we'll not implement any project at all. Okay, so this is the job that the principal hires the agent for. Now, where is the authority? Before we get to the authority, let us look at the conflict of interest between the principal and the agent. What is the conflict of interest? The conflict of interest is the following. The conflict of interest is that the payoffs from projects differ for the principal and for the agent, right? There is a particular project which is very valuable for the principal, which is in fact the best for the principal, which is the best what the principal would do if he had the knowledge about this project. But this project is not the best for the agent. In fact, the project that is best for the agent is something that is some other project, right? So it could be for various reasons, you know, to continue with this investment, to continue with the investment example. Suppose the principal is very risk averse and really prefers to invest money very, very conservatively, right? And invest money in traditional financial instruments like deposits, for instance, or government obligations. You know, the high security financial instruments. Now, the agent who lives on the commission is not happy with this choice. For the agent who is a little bit more entrepreneurial than the principal, a better opportunity is to invest in higher risk project, because then this higher risk project will bring, say, higher commissions to the agent. Or the agent's brother is the lawyer that is going to support the implementation of this project, and they can, you know, for a little kickback to the agent, everybody will be happy. So there's a conflict of interest, and where is the conflict of interest? Is that the same project will have different values for the principal and for the agent, and the principal and the agent would have preferred to implement different projects that would maximize their individual utility if only they had known which project is which. To formalize this idea, let's denote the best project for the principal, say project number 11, I don't know. So the best project for principal yields the big B bonus. This is the highest possible bonus that the project can give to the principal. Now, if this best project for the principal is implemented, so the principal has the authority over agent, and the principal tells to the agent, please, can you implement project 11 on the list? The agent will have no choice but to do so because they are in employment relationship. And in the case the best project for the principal is implemented, the agent will get beta times small b bonus. Now, what is beta? Beta is a parameter, is a number between somewhere between 0 and 1. What is the meaning of beta? What is the meaning of the parameter beta? This is the congruence parameter. It basically tells you how different the preferences of the principal and the agent are over the set of projects, one of which they will decide to implement. Okay, so now what is the small b? The small b is the payoff to the agent from the project that is the best for the agent. Let's say it's project number 7. It's not the same project as project number 11, which is favorite for the principal. Now, if the principal has no knowledge about which project to implement, and the agent has such knowledge, and the principal says, okay, agent, you know better, suit yourself and implement the project which you think is the best, the agent will have no hesitation but to recommend project number 7 to the principal, which the principal will rubber stamp. Why will he rubber stamp this? Because the principal knows that the agent's payoff from his best project is small b, and in case this project is implemented, the payoff to the principal is going to be parameter alpha times the big B. You know what the big B is. The big B is the payoff, is the maximum possible payoff that the principal could have. Now, alpha is the other parameter, the other of the two congruence parameter. It measures the conflict of interest between the principal and the agent, right? So, for example, say the best payoff that the principal could get is 1,000 euros. The best payoff that the agent could get is, let's say, 100 euros. So the big B is 1,000, the small b is 100. And the big B of 1,000 euros is derived from project number 11. But if project number 11 is implemented, the agent will only get 50 euros. What is beta then? Beta then is 0.5, right? Because the maximum payoff that the agent could get is 100. If project number 11 is implemented, he gets 50. So it's half of the maximum payoff that he could get. Therefore, in my little example, beta is equal to half. Similarly, suppose the principal is ignorant, he doesn't know which project to implement. The agent proposes to implement project number 7. The payoff for the agent from implementing project number 7 is 100 euros. The agent is very happy about it. But the principal knows that if project number 7 is implemented, the payoff to the principal is going to be not 1,000, not the big B that he could have got, but let's say 700. Okay? So then, what is the alpha? What is the alpha? Anyone? Yeah? 0.7. Now, what is the agent to do? The agent has to go to databases, he has to go to the internet, he has to read a lot of newspapers to find out what's hot on the market today and which project to invest in. So, in order to discover which project to implement, the agent undertakes some effort. Effort is costly. And for every amount of effort, e small, that the agent decides to undertake to find out which project is best, there is a cost g subscript a of little e. These are the costs of agent's effort. Okay. Now, if you pay these costs, then you will know, you will learn about the payoffs of all projects with probability e. Right. So, for example, you know a very good expert, a very experienced, educated, wise expert in financial markets who has a great deal of insider information and a great deal of expertise, who has lots of data based on which he can build a statistical model which will predict return on investment on each project with very high accuracy. This expert is not cheap. This expert costs 10,000 euros to hire. Okay, so you hire this expert, you pay 10,000 euros, so these are your costs of effort, and with probability, let's say 80%, the expert will tell you that, okay, this project is the best. Now, this probability is not, it can be, but it doesn't have to be 100%, because even the best of experts make mistakes, so there's always a degree of uncertainty. You know, suppose there is another expert who is not so experienced and not so knowledgeable, costs cheaper, but the quality of this advice, of his advice, is going to be not as high, right? So there is a convex and positive relationship between the precision of your information, between the probability with which you know which project is best, and the costs of obtaining this information. If you don't want to use experts, you just have to spend more hours on your own to become more certain, more knowledgeable about which project to implement, right? I know that different rooms at University of Konstanz have different characteristics. Some rooms are more shiny than others, other rooms are colder than others, yet other rooms are harder to reach than others. So holding a bachelor seminar in different rooms will have different benefits for me. And there are lots of rooms in the University of Konstanz, so lots of potential projects that I could implement. But in order to find out which room is the best, I need to do some research, I need to spend some time, and the more time I spend, the more certain I become about the room that I like, but there's still a probability of an error. Similarly, there is a principle, and the principle can also learn, independently of the agent. So the principle can put in a level of effort, big E, right? And at the cost GP of big E, the principal will learn which project is the best for him. Okay? So the principal and the agent will simultaneously do some research, do some background work to check which project is good, which project is not so good, and with some non-zero probability, they will learn which project is best for them. And then the person who knows which project is best and who has the formal authority to implement the project will instruct the other person to implement the project, which is, of course, the best for him. Now, efforts by the principal and the agent are chosen simultaneously. Okay. Now, which project is implemented? The project that is implemented depends on who has the authority, who has the formal authority to implement the project. Now, so principal can accept A's recommendation, or the principal can delegate the decision to the agent without retaining the option to override the recommendation. So there are two situations of authority. One is called P formal authority, or sometimes it's called integration, which is rather confusing, but there we are. So P formal authority is a situation in which both principal and the agent learn about which project is best, right? Then the agent recommends the project to the principal. The agent says, look, I think we should implement project number 7. Okay? Now, the principal, with probability big E, he will know which project is the best for him. And with this probability, the principal will say, no, I think we should implement project number 11. Can you please implement project number 11? This is what's going to happen with probability big E under P formal authority. And the agent will have no choice but to say, yes, sir, and implement project number 7, or project number 11, rather than his favorite project number 7. Now, with probability 1 minus big E, what's going to happen is the agent calls the principal and says, I really think the project number 7 we should implement because it's the best project. the principal doesn't know which project is the best for him. And then the principal will say, okay, I know that our interests are not the same. I know that we are not, you know, we have different ideas about which project is best, but I have no idea better than yours which project is best. So I rubber stamp, I authorize you to implement the project number 7 that you want to implement. I say, okay, go for it. This is what happens under P formal authority. Now, of course, there is a situation in which neither principal nor agent knows which project is best, which happens with probability 1 minus E times 1 minus big E, so nobody knows which project is best, in which case they just say, okay, we're not sure which project is best, so we're not going to do anything. Now, under A formal authority, the principal and the agent sign a contract according to which the principal agrees in writing to submit to whatever recommendation agent will make without the possibility of overruling it. Okay, so the agent will then do research. With probability small e, he will find out which project is best and will implement it without even asking principal, because the agent has the formal authority to do so. He doesn't need any rubber stamping from the principal anymore. Okay, with probability 1 minus small e, the agent will have no idea which project to implement. What's going to happen then? What's going to happen then is then the agent will call to the principal and say, look, I'm sorry, I've made an effort to find out which project is the best, but I really don't know. What do you think? And then the principal will, with probability big E, will know which project is best for the principal and will recommend this project to be implemented to the agent. The agent will implement it then. And with, as usual, with probability 1 minus big E times 1 minus small e, nobody will have any idea about which project is best, and so no project will be implemented. So these are the two types of authority that the model considers. Let's start with P-formal authority. So once again, under P-formal authority, both principal and the agent invest some effort into finding out which project is best. The agent recommends the project that he thinks is best to the principal, but then the principal, depending on whether he knows or doesn't know which project is best for him, can accept or override the decision, the recommendation made by the agent. So let's consider the choices under P-formal authority. What is the main choice variable? The main choice variable is the level of effort that the principal and the agent will decide to make. What is the principal's payoff under P-formal authority? It is very important that you understand it. It's extremely important. As long as you can write down and understand how these equations are constructed, consider you understand, say, 80% of the model. Okay, so let us go through it very slowly, very carefully. Whatever questions you have, please ask them, and please try to concentrate. Okay, so this is the payoff. This is the utility of the principle. What it's made of? It's made of first term, second term, and third term. The easiest one is the third term. These are the costs of effort that the principle makes in order to find out which project is the best. Okay, so that's very easy. What about the first term? The first term is the product of the effort that the principal makes and the payoff that the principal gets from implementing his best project. Okay, where does it come from? When the principal puts in effort level big E, then with probability big E, he will find out which project is the best for him. Now, because we are under P-formal authority, once the principal knows which project is the best for him, it doesn't matter what the agent says, the principal directly implements the project that's best for him. So with probability big E, the principal will be able to implement the project that he wants. So the expected payoff to the principal from implementing his favorite project is going to be the probability of finding out what the best project is, which is big E, times the payoff from the best project for the principal. Do you understand? Any questions? Okay. Now, let's consider the second term. The second term is a bit more complicated, but it's not a lot more complicated. So, 1 minus big E. What is 1 minus big E? 1 minus big E is the probability with which the principal will have no idea which project is the best. Yes, you have made effort, but you've pulled a short one. You're unlucky. You still don't know. You paid to this expert. The expert says, sorry, I don't know. You don't know which project is best. It happens with probability 1 minus E. So this is clear what it is. What is small e doing here? Aha. What is small e doing here? Don't forget that you are in the world of p-formal authority. Under p-formal authority, the agent is also doing some research about which project is best. The agent is also spending time and money trying to find out which project is best. With probability small e, the agent will know which project is best and will recommend this project to you. Okay? So in the event which happens with probability 1 minus big E, so that the principal doesn't know which project is the best, and the agent does know which project is the best, which happens with probability small e, the principal will optimally rubber stamp the project that the agent has proposed to him. And we know that the project that the agent will propose to the principal will be the agent's favorite project, not the principal's favorite project. Now, what is the payoff for the principal from the project that is agent's favorite? It's equal to alpha times big B, right? Remember this alpha parameter, the congruence parameter? Remember this? Okay, that's what it's doing here. So this is the expected payoff in the event when the principal does know what the best project is. And this is the expected payoff in the event that the principal does not know what the best project is. Okay, so the expected utility of the principal is equal to the expected payoff minus the cost of effort. Do you understand? A practice question. Just a moment. I'll take your question in a second. A practice question. Why would the principal still accept the agent's recommendation, even though the principal knows that it's not the optimal project for him? Okay, now, this is as far as the principal's payoff under p-formal authority is concerned. Let us go through the agent's payoff under p-formal authority. Also very important to understand. Please concentrate. It's easy, but because there are so many parameters, it needs a little bit, you know, of concentration. So this is the agent's payoff, see, under script agent. The third component is very easy. This is just the agent's cost of effort. The agent will decide to put in some effort in order to find out which project is the best for him. And that costs money, that costs effort, and this third component takes account of this. What is the first component in the agent's payoff function? What is it? Big E, which is the effort by the principal, not by the agent, times beta, times small b. What is it? Now, with probability big E, which is equal to the effort of the principal will find out which project is the best. Right? And then it doesn't matter what the agent recommends anymore, right? It doesn't matter. The agent can find out what the best project is, but the agent's recommendation will have absolutely no effect. Because remember, we are in the world of p-formal authority in which the principal can override the agent, the agent's recommendation. So with probability big E, the principal will override the agent's recommendation. The principal will say, thanks for your advice, but I have a different opinion and we should do this. In which case, in which case the payoff of the agent is going to be beta times small b. Beta is the congruence parameter. Remember my story about congruence parameter and the example that I gave? Times small b, which is the highest possible payoff that the agent can get from his preferred project. So with probability big E, the agent is not going to get his preferred project, and therefore the agent's payoff is not going to be the highest possible payoff that he could get. Let's move on to the second term. This second term is very easy. You already, I think, I hope you already understand where it comes from. So with probability 1 minus big E, the principal will say, I have no idea. With probability small e, the agent will say, ah, I have an idea and here's my recommendation. So with probability 1 minus big E times small e, the agent will be able to recommend his preferred project to the principal, and the principal will rubber stamp. Why will he rubber stamp? Because it's the best he can do in the absence of knowledge about which project is the best. Now, so with this probability, the agent's payoff is going to be the payoff from his favorite project, which is small b. Okay? So what is the agent's total expected payoff? With probability big E, it's beta times b. So that's what he will get from the principal's preferred project. And with the probability 1 minus E times the probability that the agent knows something, he will be able to realize, to implement his preferred project and get the highest possible payoff, B small. Clear? Okay. So it's like I'm just thinking of an example of this situation. There are lots of examples. So suppose I have a student who wants to write a master thesis. So I'm the principal and the student is the agent, and there are lots of thesis topics, lots of possible thesis topics available. We go out and decide try to figure out which thesis topic is the best. I'm interested in incentives. My student is interested in gender diversity and firm performance. I am sort of cool about gender diversity and firm performance, but it's not my favorite, so I have some congruence parameter. The student is also cool about incentives, but not tremendously excited. So student has also congruence parameter. We go out and try to see which potential topics are worth exploring. I don't have time. I have other things to do, so I only invest little effort. So my big E is actually very small. And therefore 1 minus E is actually very large. So we come to the appointment. And I say to the student, look, sorry, I really don't know which topic we should do. The student says, oh, I know which topic we should do, this one. And I say, okay, good, you've got it. Because I don't know anything, and I just rubber stamp the suggestion that the agent makes. And that gives rise to these payoff functions. Okay, now, having specified the payoff functions for the principal and the agent under p-formal authority, let us determine the optimal levels of effort of the principal and the agent in this situation. Now, this is clearly a game theoretical situation, right? You did game theory, I presume. What makes it game theoretical? Well, first of all, the simultaneity of the effort choice decisions by the principal and the agent, and second, that these effort choice decisions are strategic. Why are they strategic? To understand why they are strategic, let us write down the first order conditions for the optimal effort by the principal and the optimal effort by the agent. So the first order condition for the optimal effort by the principal looks like this. Where does it come from? It comes from differentiating the agent's utility function with respect to the variable big E that the principal can control. So this is the principal's payoff function. You differentiate it with respect to big E, equate it with zero, and this will be the first order condition from which the optimal level of effort by the agent is going to be derived. Okay? So we can't derive it. We can't derive the exact value of the optimal level of effort for the principal because we don't know the cost function, but if we include some cost function, we can actually solve for E, which looks like a nice problem for practice. Now, equally, the agent derives his optimal level of effort from his first order condition, and the first order condition for the agent's optimal effort comes from the agent's payoff function. So if you differentiate it with respect to small e, the level of effort that the agent chooses to make, you will get this expression. Okay? So these are two equations, equation 1 and equation 2, which are specified in terms of two decision variables, big E and small e. So you could solve these two equations simultaneously and get the optimal solutions. Now, to get back to the question that I asked a minute ago, what makes this situation strategic? What makes it strategic is that the optimal choice of effort by the principal is affected by the effort choice of the agent. And vice versa, the optimal choice of effort by the agent is affected by the choice of effort by the principal. That's what makes the situation strategic. You maximize your payoff, you choose your level of effort, anticipating, taking into account the level of effort that the principal or the agent will choose. That's what makes the situation strategic. Okay? So, suppose the agent is going to work very hard. Let's put ourselves in the principal's shoes for now, right? So the principal has to make a decision how much effort he has to invest into finding out which project is the best for him. Okay? So the optimal level of effort should satisfy this equality. Suppose the agent works really, really hard. So the agent's level of effort is huge, is close to 1. Okay? Now, the high level of effort by the agent makes the left-hand side of this equation very small, right? It reduces, brings it practically to 0, right? To a very small number. And so, given that the cost of effort function is increasing and convex in effort, the marginal effort is also going to be very small, and the marginal cost of effort being small means that the optimal level of effort taken by the principal also has to be low. So basically from this equation, what we learn is the harder the agent works, the less hard should the principal work in the optimum. That reminds me the story of Cournot model of competition. Have you heard about it? Cournot model, right? So under Cournot competition model, where firms compete in terms of quantity of output, the more output your competitors produce, the less output you should optimally produce yourself. In this sense, the strategies are called strategic substitutes. The actions by two actors, by two firms in this case, are strategic substitutes in the sense that if somebody is working harder, you should work less hard. Now, let's look at the agent. The agent's situation is very similar. The agent's situation is very similar because the harder the principal works, the lower this left-hand side becomes, and therefore the lower should the agent's effort be. Okay? So there is this dynamics in the relationship between effort by the principal and effort by the agent. Now, how do you find the equilibrium efforts of the principal and the agent? You just solve these two equations simultaneously and find these levels of effort. And we will try to do it in the tutorial. Okay. So, now this mathematical formalism, which is very easy, right? But it actually offers a lot of insights into the business of personnel management. So, it turns out that there is a trade-off. It turns out that there's a trade-off between the loss of control of the principal and the agent's initiative under P-formal authority. The harder the agent works, the less hard should the principal optimally work. The less hard the principal works, the less likely it is that he will actually know which project is the best, and therefore, the less likely it is that the principal will be able to exercise his formal authority. Okay, so what are the parameters that affect this joint equilibrium effort choice by the principal and the agent? Well, the principal works harder, principal exercises more control, the higher the stake, so the more the more interested he is in the implementation of a particular project, right? If something is extremely important, if there is a project that's going to give you €1 million payoff, of course you're going to be very careful, right? If you want to hire someone who is going to be very influential in your organization, if you want to hire, you know, a head of the department, for instance, right? You're going to spend a lot of effort trying to find out which candidate is best. So you're gonna put in a lot of effort because the stakes are very high. Okay. So also the principle works the harder, the higher the congruence parameter is. Now, what is the congruence parameter? The congruence parameter is the ratio. Is basically this parameter? Is the ratio between the payoff from the agent's preferred project and the principal's preferred project. Let's have a look how it works. Now, the more money is at stake, the larger. I made a mistake. We will correct it. Don't worry. So the more money is at stake, the larger, the higher the B, the larger this left-hand side becomes. The higher the B, the larger the right-hand side should become. The larger the hand side should become, the larger the optimal effort should be. Now, the larger the congruence parameter, alpha, right, the lower the left-hand side becomes. The lower the left-hand side becomes, the lower the right-hand side should be. The lower is the right-hand side, the lower the optimal level of effort by the principal. So, can we please go back to this slide and correct this? So, the principal exerts higher effort, the higher stakes, the lower effort by the agent, and the lower the congruence parameter alpha is. Not the higher, the lower. Just please correct it in your slides. It's not exactly clear. Okay? So, principal's effort increases with stake and decreases with agent's effort, and it decreases with the congruence parameter alpha. And it makes a lot of sense. Because if the principal and the agent are really, they have the same ideas about the project, let's say alpha is equal to 1, so that the principal's and the agent's ideas about the project are exactly the same, then the principal doesn't have to do anything. The principal can completely rely on the agent, because the principal knows the chances are that the agent is going to come up with a project that is going to be, you know, that's going to be very close in terms of payoff, if not exactly the same in terms of payoff, as the principal's preferred project. Okay? You understand the intuition? If on the other hand, alpha is very small, let's say alpha is, I don't know, very, very close to zero, there is an antagonism between the principal and the agent. The principal's favorite project and the agent's favorite project are so completely different that the agent's payoff and the principal's preferred project is so small, the agent knows it, therefore the agent is going to try and influence your decision in order to try and get the project that he wants. You don't like it, so you're going to work harder in order to override the agent's recommendation. So if the principal and the agents are very antagonistic in terms of the congruence parameter alpha, under p-formal authority, the principal and the agent are going to be the principal is going to work very hard. Here comes an interesting practice question for you. Suppose you're the boss of both the principal and the agent. Suppose you are the principal of the principal. You are the head of the organization, and you have a department which consists of the principal and the agent. And in this department, there's p-formal authority. There is only rubber stamping, but no delegation. Who would you hire? Would you hire the principal and the agent whose preferences are very similar to each other, so congruence parameter is high? Or would you hire the principal and the agent whose congruence parameters are very different, are very low, so that their ideas about the best project are very different? Who would you hire? Practice question, think about it. And at the end of the lecture, at the end of the course, you can, you know, we can review it if there is an interest. Okay, so as far as the agent is concerned, for the agent is basically symmetric, right? So the agent works the harder, the agent puts in more effort, the higher his private benefit is. Well, surprise, surprise. Look at the first order condition, it's all very clear, right? The agent works the harder, the less effort the principal puts into his work. So if the agent under P formal authority, the agent thinks, the principal isn't going to do anything, let me work harder in order to maximize the chance of me coming up with my preferred project. Yeah. Now, notice that the agent's effort depends on the principal's benefit only indirectly. Where are we? Sorry. There we are. The agent's effort depends on the principal's benefit only indirectly. It does depend on the principal's benefit. In fact, the larger the benefit for the principal is, the harder the principal is working, the harder the principal is working, the less hard the agents work. But there's no direct dependence here because there's no big B in here. Okay? So, now, this is the trade-off. Okay. Now, we could do it during the tutorial, effort choices by the principal and the agent are strategic substitutes, like in Cournot model, what it means. The harder the principal works, the less hard the agent works. The less hard the harder the agent works, the less hard the principal works. What is the implication? Well, if the principal is less informed, which means that he doesn't really have a lot of time to spend on finding out which project is the best, the agent works very hard because the agent can then influence the decision of the principal to implement the desired project. Okay? So the principal knows it. And as long as there is no big difference in the preference between the principal and the agent, the principal may have an incentive to actually remain ignorant, to actually invest very little in finding out which project is the best. So, for instance, you know, let me give you an example. Suppose alpha is equal to 1. Suppose the preference of the principal and the agent are completely the same. Alpha is equal to 1. If alpha is equal to 1, then we have this left-hand side very, very small, all else equal, right? The principal puts in very little effort, if any. If the principal puts in very little effort, if any, the agent is working very, very, very hard. So if you can create a situation in which there's a P-formal authority between two people who are very, very similar in terms of their preferences, the congruence parameter is very high, you can actually have a situation in which only the agent works, whereas the principal isn't really doing a lot. So next time, when you hire someone in your team, think about who you want to hire in order to reduce your own optimal effort, right? And think also about who your boss would want you to hire in order to maximize the joint effort of you two. These are two different questions. Okay, now let us consider the case of the A formal authority. The time is ticking away, so let's move on. Under the A formal authority, just to refresh your memory, the difference between A and P formal authority is such that under A formal authority, the principal cannot override the agent's decision. No way. So whatever the agent is going to implement, the principal has to agree to. He cannot override the agent's recommendation. This is a strange situation, isn't it? Well, there's nothing strange in this situation. It's called delegation, another way, right? So you delegate, completely delegate authority to the agent. Why should you delegate? It turns out that there could be an incentive to delegate because under delegation, the agent works harder than under integration. And if you want the agent to work harder, give him a little bit of authority. Just delegate a little bit of authority to him. And this alone, without any changes in fixed wage or any other job arrangements, is going to make the agent work harder. How does it work? Is the following. Let us consider the payoff functions of the principal and the agent under the case of informal authority. Let's go through them, through these components. Costs of effort, nothing interesting here. What is this in the principal's payoff function? Well, with probability small e, the agent will know which project is the best. Okay? And because we are in the world of a formal authority, which means that the agent can do whatever he likes if he is informed, the principal will derive a payoff alpha times big B with probability small e, because this will be the payoff from the project that the agent likes, not the principal. Okay? Now, it could be that despite agent's effort, the agent doesn't know which project is best. And then the agent will call the principal and say, look, I really appreciate that you've delegated so much authority to me, but unfortunately, I still don't know which project to implement. This is going to happen with probability 1 minus e. In this event, there are two possibilities. With probability big E, which is equal to the principal's effort, right? The principal will still put in some effort into discovering which project is the best, even under a formal authority, which with probability small e, the principal will be able to advise on which project the agent should implement. And of course, if the agent doesn't know anything, the principal will recommend his preferred project, not the agent's preferred project. In which case, the principal will get a payoff big B. So, under a formal authority, the principal's payoff is the payoff from the agent's preferred project, which happens with probability small e, plus the payoff from the principal's preferred project, which happens in the event when the agent doesn't know and the principal does know. What is the agent's payoff? Well, very easy. With probability small e, the agent knows which project is best, and so that's what he gets. With the corresponding probability, 1 minus e, the agent doesn't know which project is best, but fortunately, there is the principal who might know which project is best. The principal will know which project is best with probability big e, in which case the agent's payoff is beta times small b. Beta is congruence parameter. Take away the costs of effort. So we have the payoff functions for the principal and the agent. We can determine the optimal effort levels of the principal and the agent from the first order conditions. These are the first order conditions for the principal and for the agent. The story is almost the same as under P formal authority, almost the same. So the principal will work harder when stakes for the principal are higher. The agent will work harder when the principal is not working so hard, when the stakes for the agent are high, and interestingly, when the congruence parameter is low. So when agent cannot really trust the principal, right? When agent can't really trust the principal's choice, when the principal's choice is very, very different from the agent's preferred choice, so beta is very small, right? The left-hand side becomes larger, and the agent's effort increases as well. So if you have delegation, and you know that your principal is a total, you know, opposite of you, you will work the harder, the less congruent your preferences for the best project are. That makes sense, right? So it's a mathematical model, it's highly abstract, but it actually can generate a lot of implications and predictions that you can apply to analyzing organizational phenomena. Again, as in the case of P formal authority, the optimal efforts of the principal and the agent are strategic substitutes in the sense that the harder the agent works, the less hard the principal works, and vice versa. Now, here comes the most interesting part of today's lecture. The most interesting part of today's lecture is how do you decide whether to delegate or not delegate? So now is the choice. Now you are the principal and you can make a choice either to delegate the formal authority to the agent or to retain formal authority to yourself and rubber stamp only in the case that you don't know. Right? This is the decision that the principal can make, and we know situations in which the principal likes to retain the formal authority, and yet we know the situation in which the principal gives up the formal authority. Right? So, for example, I have the formal authority to hire Mitarbeiter. I have the formal authority to hire associates to my chair, subject to some legal restrictions. For instance, there is various legal procedures involved in hiring, but that's sort of law. The University of Constance does not have beyond legal requirements. The University of Constance does not have any formal authority in dictating who I should hire as co-workers. Okay, so it can be both ways. Now, what should we do? Should we keep formal authority or should we give it away to the agent? It's a trade-off. Why? Well, look here. Let's look at the optimal effort level, at the first order conditions, at the optimal level, at the first order conditions for the optimal effort of the agent, when the principal retains the formal authority and when the principal gives up the formal authority to the agent, right? As long as beta is less than one, as long as the principal and the agent are not the same in terms of their preferences, under what configuration of authority will the agent work harder? Yes? But in words, you're absolutely correct. So let me repeat it in, you know, shortened version. So the point was, the agent will be able to implement his preferred project with certain probability under both P-formal and A-formal authority. However, under P-formal authority, the agent has to worry about the situation in which the principal will also know which project is the best, which happens with probability E. And if this probability is very high, then the P-formal authority is not going to let the agent implement his favorite project. That reduces the marginal product of effort for the agent, and so the agent is not going to work very hard under P-formal authority. Under A-formal authority, on the other hand, such possibility does not exist. Under A-formal authority, whether the agent will or will not implement his preferred project depends a lot more on the effort of the agent rather than on the effort of the principal. And that makes A-formal authority a better form of authority, a better configuration from the point of view of the effort of the agent. Right? So if you want to maximize the effort of the agent, you know what to do. You have to delegate. Okay? But then the question is, why don't you delegate everything? If you want people, you obviously want people to work as hard as possible. Why don't you delegate everything? Why do you still have situations in which there's formal authority? And the freedom of the agent is confined to the possibility to rubber stamp, but is not legally warranted. Right? So, it turns out that there are also costs for the principal. Now, what are the costs for the principal? The costs for the principal are, well, if the alpha parameter is very small, if the principal and agent's preferences are incongruent, the principal may actually, as a result of the higher effort by the agent, end up in a worse situation than when he has the formal authority. Right? So, when the agent works hard under A-formal authority, which he will, we know this. It could be that when alpha is so low, the principal's utility is going to be miserably low, because the principal, because almost certainly the agent will implement a project which is not going to be good for the principal at all. The principal anticipates this, and if A is not high enough, if alpha is not high enough, there's no way the principal will delegate anything to the agent. So here is sort of the summary of this trade-off. The good thing about delegation is that agent works harder, right? So if agent works harder, he can get higher benefit. If he can get higher benefit, you don't need to pay him as high, or you can get more effort from employing this agent, right? So, and delegation can be more or less profitable depending on the other parameters of the problem. So when, for instance, the benefit to the principal is high from his preferred project, right, what's going to happen is the, well, when benefit is high and the congruence parameter is low, the higher effort of the agent is not going to deliver a larger payoff to the principal. In fact, it may even deliver a lower payoff to the principal. So the principal is not going to do it. Now, higher B, if this is more important for the agent to choose his preferred project, you should delegate, because then the agent will work harder. Congruence, when congruence is high, delegate. Absolutely. When congruence is low, think about it. Both on the agent and the principals, from the agent's and the principal's point of view. So you could have a number of testable predictions from Aguillon and Tirol model, which basically summarizes the logic that we have just derived from the first order conditions under the P and A formal authority, and from comparing the implied optimal levels of effort from these conditions. So if a task is relatively unimportant to the principal, so the benefit from the best way of doing this task for the principal is low relative to the benefit from the best way of doing this task for the agent. So for instance, you know, I don't care which room I have my bachelor seminar, but maybe my secretary will have different difficulty booking different rooms, right? So in this case, I'm happy to delegate the authority to book the room and date to my secretary, completely delegated without leaving the possibility of overriding it. When principal can trust the agent, delegate, right? This is actually one of the advantages, if you think about it, one of the advantages of family-run firms, right? When the congruence between members of a family is high, you can delegate as a manager. The more you can delegate as a manager, the more effective the organization of the firm is, because the more tasks you can the more tasks you can supervise at a given point in time. When agent can't trust the principal, so when it happens so that in one department there is a principal and the agent with very opposite ideas, with very different ideas about what the best way of doing things is, the best thing that the principal can do is to delegate. Because if the principal does not delegate, then the agent who does not share the principal's ideas about which project is the best is not going to work at all, or work very little, and that's going to be bad for the principal. When costs of information acquisition for the principal are high compared to the agent, this last point refers to the differences in the costs of effort function. So far, we've sort of ignored the costs of effort considerations. When the additional costs of information gathering for the principal are higher than for the agent, it means that at a given level of effort, the marginal costs of effort for the principal are way lower than for the agent. So what's going to happen? If this is big, right? If this is large, this has to be large, which means if this has to be large, if this is large, then the level of effort that the principal will decide to invest is going to be low. If the level of effort that the principal decides to invest is going to be low because of the high cost of information acquisition, the left-hand side in the agent's first order condition, this is small, is going to be large. The agent will work harder. Okay? And the agent will work under the delegation the harder than under integration, than under P-formal authority. Why? Because of the beta, right? So the agent's effort is going to be higher under delegation than under no delegation. So in whatever the circumstance in which you need the agent to work hard, the way to do so is to delegate. And you know, when it's very expensive for you to work hard, collecting information is difficult. When the task is not very important for you, and when you can trust the agent, and when the agent cannot trust you, just delegate. I was planning to also cover the topics of authority and communication, but I have no time to do so. I have a little bit of time, so I will cover the real authority and monetary incentive to address the point. The point that one of the students made about wages. Okay. Yes. So, information acquisition, I leave it for self-study. This is still exam relevant. I leave it for self-study, just a couple of slides. Let's look at the issue of incentives. You know, we did a lot of incentives in Personnel Economics 1. Next lecture will be a lecture on incentives, where we sort of summarize and expand on the issue of incentives. So it's proper that we cover incentives here a little bit. So far we assumed that the agent only gets the fixed wage. Caroline proposed that, okay, let's, in addition to delegating or not delegating authority, let us also introduce some monetary incentives to the agent. Okay, let's do that and let's see whether it works or not. Now, suppose following this suggestion, the principal decides to pay a bonus W to the agent in case when the right project is implemented. So the principal writes in the contract that, you know, when the project is implemented such that gives me the payoff of so-and-so, the agent gets the bonus W. Now, when any other project is implemented, the principal gets the fixed wage and his private benefit from the project that is implemented. So the bonus is equal to zero. Okay, well, the existence of this incentive changes the gains for the principal and for the agent in the following way. The gain for the principal becomes smaller, and the gain for the agent becomes larger. So this, of course, it happens So the principal's benefits become smaller, the agent's benefits become larger because of this transfer of bonus W. Now, if you write down the first order conditions under P-formal authority for the principal and for the agent, for the principal and the agent's effort and the P-formal authority with new benefits, you'll see the following. Because beta tilde, the new benefit for the principal, is lower than before, the principal will work less hard. Because the principal will work less hard, and because the new benefit for the agent is larger than before, the agent will work harder. So the existence of incentives conditional on implementation of the project which is preferred for the principal, what they do under P-formal authority, they get the agent to work harder. So, surprise, surprise, agent's effort is higher with incentives than without. We have known that before. Incentives are a wonderful thing to do, and we will recap on the benefits, advantages and costs of monetary incentives in a week's time. For now, thanks for your attention, As usual, my door is open if you have questions. Otherwise, see you next week. Thanks.